Good morning, everybody. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it is March 9th, 2021. So happy birthday to my son, Ben, today. Okay, who's not even listening, I'm sure, but I just wanted to get that out of the way. Okay, happy birthday, Ben. All right, we have a nice show for you this morning with an old friend. Stuart Udell is here. Stuart is the CEO of a company you probably know called Achieve 3000, a good company. He'll tell us what they're doing these days. They've got some new studies coming out on learning trends during the pandemic, and they work on equity and all that. He'll tell us all about it. He is also a commissioner on AASA's Learning 2025 National Commission for Student-Centered Equity-Focused Education, and you know that's what we do here. Education Talk Radio, as you probably do know, is part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, our group over at ace-ed.org. We try to have the industry and the educators get together right there as a point to talk about equity. All right, without a sales situation involved, because the industry has a lot to say, and it's very, very intelligent, and it speaks with a good voice. We want to get that word out there to all the educators. It's a symbiotic relationship between the educators and the industry, and that's what our consortium is there for, on the road to equity. It's all over at ace-ed.org, and if you go over there to ace-ed.org, you'll see our magazine, which is a wonderful online journal called Equity and Access. We are very, very proud of it. You can flip through it there. If you do take a minute and do that, you'll be very impressed. All of our podcasts are over there, plus a heck of a lot of other information on the road to equity, pre-K-12. Again, the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org. That is an industry supported with some of the best companies in the education industry. It's an industry-supported consortium. We thank all of our members who are there and position themselves as real equity leaders. Okay, again, ace-ed.org. Okay, and I'm happy to bring back an old friend, Stuart Udell. Stu, how you doing? It's Larry here.
Hey, Larry, it's great to be with you again, and congratulations on all the terrific work that you're doing with the consortium and to
thank you.
Bring ed tech players and educators together.
Well, we try. You know, as I've often said, I'll say what I said a minute ago. I know the industry pretty well, and when I talk to the folks in the industry like you who are thought leaders, okay, they have a lot to say about equity and what's going on, and they have their finger to the pulse because they have to create the products that the educators need. And unfortunately, Stu, and you know this, most of the time the educators meet the industry in a sales situation. All right? Yet behind that sales rep are usually an awful lot of people working to create the right product. So we tried to create a place where everybody comes together and can talk with away from a sales situation. And that's what our consortium is all about. So thank you, kind sir.
It's wonderful. Thank you again.
Okay, for bringing that up. So enough about me. Let's talk. Tell everybody about Achieve 3000. You're the CEO.
You bet. Yeah, I joined Achieve about 2.5 years ago, but
yeah.
I really have known the organization for a long time. I was friendly with the founder a couple decades ago, and as she went out to raise money, served as a professional reference for her with a couple of her early private equity partners. But I also have some personal experience with the product. My kids used Achieve 3000 in middle school. They're now through with college and graduate school and such. And then,
you have an age to bid. Let me make the point. Wait, you have an age to bid.
Well, my LinkedIn photo certainly suggests I've
there you go.
Aged at all. So thank you for pointing that out.
No problem. My pleasure.
And then also in some of my prior worlds where we had a chance to meet, Larry, where I was with organizations that ran schools, online schools and dropout recovery academies and alternative and special ed schools, we used Achieve very successfully in quite a few of those schools. So I came to the organization from the perspective of, you know, friend of founder, parent user, and actual, you know, customer.
Right. It's really good. But I want you to tell everybody what you guys do at Achieve. Okay. Some people may not know.
You bet.
What is the actual product? Please brag.
You bet.
Have fun.
So our, you know,
yeah.
Thank you, Larry. Our core product is Achieve 3000 Literacy, which has been, you know, out there for about 20 years, doing a fantastic job. What it's really known for doing is taking some of the most challenging students, struggling readers, and accelerating their literacy gains, although it's used, you know, in all grade levels and certainly for all levels of students. Secondly, we had a product that was acquired about 5 years ago called SmartyAnts, which is a program that teaches foundational skills to early and emerging readers. So that was kind of what I and some other members of the leadership team stepped into 2.5 years ago. But we've been pretty busy. We've done one acquisition a year, starting in 2018, with the acquisition of a fantastic platform called Actively Learn, which is a digital curriculum platform for science, social studies, English language arts, career and tech ed, and other areas. And of course, that type of platform in the world today, where kids and teachers can engage with each other around content, has become, you know, fairly important. Then moving forward in 2019, we acquired some math assets that we put into the Actively Learn platform. So we were thrilled to roll out our first math product, Achieve 3000 Math, this past summer. It's had nice early traction. And most recently, just a few months ago, we acquired a professional development platform called Teachonomy, which is a professional learning community for educators. It's brand new, you know, and we love it. Like your users who you're trying to connect, Teachonomy was founded by an educator who actually still is a fifth grade teacher in a New Jersey classroom, and he works evenings and weekends with us to extend the Teachonomy platform to more educators out there.
That's pretty cool. I like that. I never heard of any of this. We'll have to learn more about all this as we go on. And put all this, okay, if you can. This is here comes the big question, and this is what's on everybody's mind. The world has changed, and it's been changing for a long time, but we really realized it over the last year, et cetera. You know, we've all been remote, and we're hybrid, and we're remote, we're going back, and all that sort of stuff. While all that's been going on, the equity question, which you are very familiar with, it really popped up, all right? And, you know, and social justice, we can go right down that whole list, but it all boils down to diversity, equity, inclusion, plus the whole idea of learning in this crazy time. And I want you to do this, and I know of all people you can do this, put Achieve 3000 into that milieu for everybody.
Yeah, well, you know, look, equity is kind of it's part of the DNA of our products for a lot of reasons, frankly. I think first, our products, particularly Achieve 3000 Literacy, is specifically developed on closing the achievement, or what we'd like to talk about more is the opportunity gap. So, you know, we get that type of acceleration. We've got, you know, lots of incredible studies. We're rated top-rated reading program by Evidence for ESSA in terms of effect sizes. So we're really thrilled about the students we serve. And as a result, we work in 9 of the 10 largest districts in the country, 77 of the largest 100 districts in the country. And, you know, as you might expect, you know, serve a wide, diverse student body and educator body. But because we, you know, have very dynamic content, we have the ability to serve up, you know, new content every day in the platform. And we do. We roll out 20 to 30 new articles a week that are part of the platform. And, you know, this year alone, we're committed to delivering 350 brand new articles that are culturally sensitive and responsive, not just to the Black community and the Hispanic community, but to Native Americans, to Pacific Islanders, to the LGBTQIA community. So, you know, that's just part of kind of the DNA from a product side. And, you know, we've been extending partnerships to bring more cultural responsiveness to our product as well.
Sure.
So we work very closely with Dwayne Reed, who is a teacher in the Chicago public school system who went viral for, you know, some educational rapping that he has done. We just have consummated partnerships in the last year with EDU Inc., which is the common Black historically Black college application. and we subsidize and underwrite some of the funds for those applications for students in the districts with whom we work. We just consummated a partnership with NABU to bring native tongue, African, and Haitian literature into our products. So there's a lot that we're doing
a lot going on externally.
Yeah, and you know, look, we take our cue, you know, most of our sales folks, most of our professional service folks, our account managers, our former teachers, principals, superintendents.
Yeah.
So
Good point.
Certainly take our cues from our customers. And then Larry, there's a lot we have done internally as an organization. And, you know, I'm very proud to say with some of the real challenges we had last spring, you know, we've been working as an organization for a while, but like many, we certainly have accelerated our efforts internally. And, you know, we started by creating, rather than, you know, hiring a position and kind of putting it in the corner, we took a community approach to equity in our company. So we created a committee called CARE, Community Action for Respect and Equity, led by two of our team members. We have four subcommittees, one on product and services, one on data, one on internal professional development for our staff, and one on building partnerships. These committees are operated by about 35 volunteer team members internally, and they are just running so fast. I'm just so proud of the efforts about what they've done to bring training to our team, to our executive team, to look critically at, you know, our compensation data, to look at our hiring practice, to, you know, do company-wide training on unconscious bias, to bring in experts like Dr. Anthony Muhammad to do, you know, unconscious bias training for our whole team. And it's been spectacular. It's been, it's really great because it's owned by our team, not by, you know, an executive who's kind
exactly.
of sits in the corner.
Exactly. And congratulations on all that. And I got to tell you something, Stu. I know you're a guy who always backed up what he said. Okay. I know you for that. Okay. And you're always a caring individual.
Thank you.
I mean that with all the things you do. But it's so important, okay, that you were proactive on all of that. Not you, the company was proactive.
Yes.
Okay. Rather than reactive. And that's a real telling sign. Okay, at any time in this day and age, it's incredibly important. I really congratulate you on all that. It's so important out there that not only the schools, but the companies who create the products and services for the schools represent what all the people that are in the schools. Okay, and it's that simple. You're doing a good job. Okay, really something. You guys
well,
also
thank
did
you.
Some,
it's a real win-win yeah. when we do it
the
right way, right?
It is a
win-win. You know, our internal morale has been fantastic, I think largely as a result of the efforts of this committee. And, you know, customers are seeing us respond, you know, in real time with, you know, great features, additions, new content. And ultimately, you know, it's the kids who win, and that's the best part.
Yeah, it is. It is achieve3000.com, everybody. Okay, if you want to find out more. And you guys just did some studies. I want to go over this with you. You did some survey studies on learning trends. What did you find out during the pandemic? Is this good news or bad
news?
Yeah,
well.
Is this good news or bad news?
You know, it's a little bit of both, I think.
Oh, okay.
We did two studies. We did our first study back in May called The Impact of School Closures on Student Learning. And we did a follow-up study. The first study was to predict what we thought would happen based on data that we were seeing in between mid-March and May. The second study was done in October called Real-Time Insights into the COVID Slide to look at what actually happened. Now, in the first study, what we saw was pretty dramatic. And, of course, we knew that it was a caustic and dramatic moment in the world.
Sure.
It wasn't surprised, but we saw nationwide about a 45% decline in usage. Now, you know, that's in the Achieve 3000 platform, but, you know, it's really not about Achieve 3000. You know, that is a platform upon which kids practice the skill of reading. So what we effectively saw was a near 50% decline in reading practice time among kids in schools. Now, the great news, though, was in that study, we saw some outliers. So some organizations or some districts, I should say, like Duval County, Florida, like Irving, Texas, like Marlboro, New Jersey, who had built ed tech into the fabric of the district, whereby educators knew what to do, whereby kids knew what to do without being told, whereby, you know, one-to-one initiatives and connectivity were already in place. We saw almost no change in performance of about 13% of our customers, but on average, usage was down about 50%.
Wow.
We also saw an immediate widening of the achievement gap of in between, let's say, 3 and 6%. We saw a widening in the gap between struggling and advanced learners by about 7%. And we projected that by back to school, we would see learning loss, which is really unrealized potential gains, because usually there is, reading is a skill that flexes. You don't lose it all. It's like riding a bicycle. So we actually typically see gains over the summer, modest gains. We were predicting losses of 28%, though, against those potential gains. So then we get to the second study, Larry, which was in October. What really happened? And, the good news, the silver lining is that the losses were not as dramatic as they thought, although, they were still problematic. So what we found was that engagement really mattered a lot. Those schools in which kids stayed engaged through the spring before the mm-hmm. summer hit, those yeah. kids lost about 8%. The kids that that were not engaged, or I should say the districts in which kids were not engaged in the spring, like school just kind of stopped happening, we saw losses of about 20% through our intake data through October. So, the good news was that, again, those districts that had built ed tech and just good practices into the fabric of their operations and their expectations actually did a great job, stemming the tide, I would say. We did, though, sadly see about a 10% widening of the achievement gap versus what would typically be expected at this time of year. That's, obviously quite tragic. We also saw that there was an acceleration in learning loss for younger students. So for those little kindergarten, first, second grade kids, it's harder. And we've seen that in almost every national study, other great studies done by NWEA and some of the other, fantastic organizations in the space.
So when you get data like that, okay, and data is important, okay, and we're really learning that these days. But when you get data like that and you discuss it with your team, what is the reaction of the company to that? I mean, you guys are pretty good at this, okay? So you get the data, you see it. What do you guys do with that data? How does it work itself into what you do on a regular basis?
Yeah, you bet. I mean, I can just give some examples from this round. But when we saw, the back-to-school data coming – I'm sorry, the spring data coming in, we immediately, moved into action. And frankly, quite a few of our competitors did the same by making all of our products available for free. In our case, we did it through the end of the summer. And we just said, look, and that meant our engineers had to work evenings and weekends for 2 or 3 weeks because we were not built as consumer tools. We didn't have a way for an individual teacher or a parent or a kid to register for any of our programs. So we made that available for free. And, frankly, with back to school, we were rewarded, as quite a few districts were thankful for, our contributions and rewarded us with, expansions of contracts.
Absolutely. You got a good product, too.
So that's, well, thank you. I think, Larry, the second part of the answer is we think a lot about, what recommendations come from this data? What do we want to do to our products? But also, what do we want to share with others in the world? And, we came out this fall with some, core recommendations. One was we need to focus on reading. And I always say, and math, by the way, those are, of course, core skills. But literacy, we know, is the gateway skill. And, our recommendation mirrors what the National Reading Panel found in 2006, that kids ought to be practicing the skill of reading 90 minutes a day in school. Now, that means integrated with other subject areas and content, of course. But, back in, I think it was in the year 2000, John Goodlad wrote a book and did a study called A Place Called School. And he found that the actual skill of reading was only being practiced 7 minutes a day on average across all grade levels.
I believe that.
Think
about it.
We can teach kids to death, but whether it's learning how to play a piano or shoot a basketball, you actually have to practice the skill as well. Secondly, we're recommending that, districts use this summer to really focus on remediating learning loss. The funding is there with the new ESSER money and the new GEAR money. And I think it, I think most districts tend to really focus on it. And it's unconscionable for those who don't, because, you know, we know that we have to make up for lost time. And broadly speaking, I think we also, you know, are recommending targeted interventions for struggling readers, because we know we started, even before the pandemic, we had somewhere in between 10 and 15 million struggling readers in the United States. So that problem has, never goes away. And lastly, we think a lot internally about, you know, building in our tools, engagement strategies for kids, because we know that in this hybrid environment or remote environment, it's at times even harder to engage. So whether that's, you know, reward systems or activities or, you know, integrating different tools into learning pedagogy, engagement, we know matters. And we saw it in the studies.
Well, you did indeed. You brought it up. And actually, I was going to ask you that as my next question. You segued nicely, as a matter of fact, all right, into that, because you said how important it is for the kids to be engaged. But, you know, so many kids were remote, and then so many kids didn't have broadband, or there was one computer for six kids with low broadband. And so, you know, everybody knows the stories of the horrors of what's going on in there. Okay. But when you notice that the more engaged kids are, okay, the better we can do, so to speak, which is the internal workings, if I may. I think I've got this right, of any given product. We'll use it, Achieve 3000. Okay, and I'm thinking, when you say that, you know, you have something dopey like Angry Birds or that the Candyland, whatever that crazy game is, you know. But they're, and this is the game, and Facebook. Let me just use Facebook. Okay, Facebook asks people to have likes. Oh, did you like what I said? And that in itself becomes a reward. And the search for that reward is the engagement that Facebook figured out, for better or worse. I won't get into that right now. So when you're working in today's world, okay, with digital products, okay, we know engagement is the factor. Do you talk with your engineers about how you just said you did, but how deeply can you guys go to engage the children? And engage the teachers, I might add. It's a tough time, but it's interesting when you take the two things together. You're smart enough to answer that question. Go ahead. The Mark Zuckerberg, ladies and gentlemen,
yeah.
The Mark Zuckerberg of education, Stuart Udell. Okay.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. Well, look, you know, all that matters is engagement, right? At the end of the day, we track usage very closely because, and I mean this, Larry, you know, there are not enough dollars to go around for these kids, particularly, yeah. You know, kids from impoverished yeah. backgrounds. And we seriously take our responsibility. If we are going to work with a school or a district, we better make sure we get the job done, and we better make sure the product is getting usage, not only from self-interest and making sure we get a renewal, but, you know, if I truly believe if a district can do a better job with someone else's product or program, they ought to use that. So we look very closely at usage, and, you know, from a learning engineering and science perspective, you know, we think about what gets kids motivated. Do points get them motivated? Well, in some kids they do. And of course, you know, we can have a long debate about the benefit of and the challenges of both extrinsic rewards and potentially intrinsic rewards. But, you know, for a lot of kids, you know, having a point system, having a leaderboard, having badges, having the ability to choose an avatar, you know, having the ability yeah. to choose, you know, a screen color. These are all things that, you know, excite and motivate
important.
Kids. And if you can get just a little bit more excitement, you know, it leads to engagement. Engagement
yeah.
leads to usage. Usage leads to results. And that's that's kind of the linear equation we're trying to follow. Now, the other way we push engagement is, you know, through training and edification of our users. So, you know, we have
right.
to have a team of about 120 people who run around the country, although now they're running around doing mostly webinars, engaging,
yeah.
you know, educators on how to use the product, and not just saying, okay, you know, here's how you turn it on, here are all the features, but also to say, okay, I'm going to model a lesson for you. This is how you teach a science lesson with actively learn. This is how you teach a social studies lesson using an article from Achieve 3000 Literacy, and really integrating it into the classroom so that you can see it modeled. And then, of course, we do a lot of data coaching as well, so that, you know, this data and this activity that kids are creating are captured, analyzed, and harnessed by teachers so that they can kind of reinvest their energies in the most important areas and with the kids who need the most help.
Yeah, it's so darn important. That professional, you talked about the teachonomy is your professional development thing, okay? And, you know, it's so darn important. And I'll tell you, most teachers, and people sometimes forget this, okay? Teachers were never trained, for the 99% of them, to be virtual teachers, okay? They were trained to be in the classroom, all right? And all of a sudden we said, oh, no, you're not going to do it that way. Okay, there's a whole way to do it. Of course, hello, that's pretty difficult. When you, and I don't know teachonomy per se, you're welcome to talk about that, but now that we're in a brave new world, so to speak, and there's going to be a brave new world in some way, even when we get back, quote, to school, that normal is going to be a new normal. Okay, so talk about professional development. Okay, you just brought that up. I was going to ask you this, so you just segued nicely. Talk about professional development in today's nutsy world.
You bet, and I'll talk about kind of the past and our evolution and then where I think things are going. You know, starting with the past, if we spin back to 2019 in Achieve 3000 as an example, we lived in a world where by contract with, you know, a few thousand school districts around the country, we were contracted to deliver about 10,000 live days. So a day,
wow,
you know, someone getting on a plane or driving 2 hours in a car, staying in a hotel the night before, showing up in the morning and spending 5 or 6 hours in a building, you know, doing either stand and deliver training or walk arounds or data coaching or modeling of lessons. And that's the way we used to operate by necessity. And by the way, in that world, about 1 to 2% of our customers chose virtual delivery instead of live on site.
Wow.
Now, you know, pivot to 2020,
yeah,
those 10,000 days, we effectively to our customers gave a 3-for-1 exchange. We said, look, a day of us in our building is equal to 3 webinars or online activities,
good,
you know,
like
anywhere
that,
up to say 90 minutes each. So we just, you know, created a
like
kind
that
of a transaction or a monetary system where they could trade in and blend days live. And we do have, by the way, in Arizona and Florida and Texas, we do have some days still being delivered right now live in person, but we're down to, you know, a run rate of a couple few hundred a year, not 10,000 a year. So that was, you know, part of our evolution. Where Teachonomy came into play is, you know, we were, Chuck Poole, the founder, who's a fantastic visionary, he and I were introduced by a common friend from the Future of School, a board that a nonprofit association that I'm involved with, or foundation, I should say, that I'm involved with. And we kind of liked Chuck so much, we bought his company. It was like the old Gillette commercial.
Great.
We
liked
the razor so much, we bought the company.
Yeah.
And as I said, Chuck is still with us and still in the classroom. It was
what's his name? Victor Kayam. He owned the
connected
Patriots for a while. Yeah, I like that so
exactly
much.
Exactly. And
company,
you know, maybe someday Achieve will own sports franchises too,
yeah,
I hope.
Yeah.
But we saw a future for a blend of live webinar and on-demand training. And what Teachonomy is really fabulous as a platform, it really is more of a professional learning community where educators can talk to each other. Educators can post and share, you know, bite-sized videos with each other. So practitioners are sharing, you know, their own practices. And then we have thought leaders too. So we've got, you know, Bill Daggett and Principal L and other, you know, fantastic folks on the platform as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was with an eye towards the future. My belief is that we don't ricochet back to a world where, you know, we're running around school buildings all day long again. If I had to give a best guess, and it's based on no science whatsoever, I think that we maybe revert to a third at the most 50% of our work back actually in buildings next year. And then perhaps over a 3 to 5 year period where, you know, at a 60 or 70% run rate. But, you know, I think this has been an inflection point. I think the world has changed.
Yeah.
I think we've now shown that not only do, you know, ed tech companies not have to run people all over the country to deliver services, we don't have to do substitute teachers. We can do as much
do
in a targeted 30-minute training
days
after school.
And I'm going to tell you
days,
something.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something else. You know, we always for years have talked about, quote, the summer slide, okay, on
you
the
bet
pretext that kids have to go home to harvest. Where this how this continues in the 21st century is beyond me. Okay, we don't have to have that summer slide anymore. If we do this right, and what you said before, engage the kids properly over the summer, we can eliminate that summer slide. We can do it.
That's right. Well, it's going to take some mindset change as well.
Hello, yeah.
Not just on all the educational pedagogy we're talking about. But, you know, look, we all know I've got, you know, districts in my backyard that have had snow days, even though they're all fully remote. You know, you get a foot of snow, it's a snow day. And, you know, why student learning needs to stop when most or all kids in certain districts are at home already is beyond me. But it does show you how embedded some of these practices have been for, you know, more than a century.
It is. And talk about, this is interesting. You're on, I like this here. I just want to talk about this for a second. You were on the AASAs. I just did a show with them this morning with Amy Sickle. Okay, do you know Amy?
I do, yeah, sure. That's awesome. Larry?
Hello? Stu, are you there? Hold on. Stu, are you there? Hello? Stu? Wait a minute. Let me see. Maybe I got him now. Stu, are you
Larry,
there?
I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? Now, it just went dead. I don't know what happened. Technical glitch. We're back now. Sorry about that.
No worries whatsoever.
Okay.
Yes.
Don't blame me, everybody. Blame AT&T or Spectrum or whoever you want to blame on that one. Okay? No problem. Okay. Stu, let me ask you something. I was asking you this. I did a show this morning already with AASA, with Amy Sickle, who's the former superintendent of Abington, about their superintendent certification thing. It's a good show. But you're in their National Commission for Student-Centered, Equity-Focused Education. Okay? And to me, this is important because, A, it's student-centered, and, B, it's equity-focused. That has a lot to do with what we're talking about with the transition to digital, and we can continue teaching these kids as needed. Talk about that commission for a second and what you're doing on that.
Well, thank you, Larry. Yeah, I'm certainly – first of all, I'm honored to be a part of it. I was one of, I think, three EdTech vendors or players who were named. Along with Jesse Woolley Wilson at Dreambox and Malcolm Smith from Metametrics. And there are about 20 or so superintendents and some state commissioners on the committee as well. It was, formed by ASA really to look at, to create bold recommendations to transform American education. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, feeling like we're at an inflection point. We've talked on the commission about this being education Sputnik moment. This is an opportunity where the world has changed. And
I love that.
We want to take the best of the past and the best of the new and put it together so that we can move forward. It's a fun story, but, the commission is co-chaired by two, very good friends of mine. First, Dr. Bill Daggett at the Successful Practices Network, which is one of the, premier partners in this commission. And then secondly, Dr. Dan Dominish, who was my superintendent in high school 35 years ago. My mom worked for him. I guess it comes full circle. I'm quite honored to have been, appointed by, two folks who I, tremendously respect. And it's important, they are both visionaries in that, as you said earlier in introducing the show, they see technology and ed tech partnerships as being a very important part of the future of education. So
we're
at the table as equals with superintendents and state commissioners, and they all treat us that way. And it's really great because we're all in it to, again, try to make bold recommendations to transform American education. What that will manifest in is in a series of reports that I think will, start to be released later this year. I know there's been some communication with the Biden administration, which is exciting. And then we're also going to be looking at, best practices and demonstration sites to make sure that some of these recommendations actually work in practice. So
it's really a collaborative effort just to make sure that we use this moment to catapult forward and to make sure that we have an even better system moving forward for educators and for kids.
Yeah, and nobody's mentioned that to me before, a Sputnik moment, okay? I love that.
Yes.
Okay, Sputnik moment. And by the way, for anybody, do you think there's people out there who don't know what Sputnik is? Still.
I think that's the case. I think we may be in the minority.
It was the first satellite. The Russians, the Russians, when we cared what the Russians did, threw this little tin ball up into space, okay, and we got scared that they were going to invade, of course. They had the space, and it changed everything in October 1957. I think it was 57, and it changed everything. What year was it? Was it 57?
It did change everything.
Well, maybe
that I cannot confirm, but I agree that it changed everything.
Yeah. I know it was October, okay? I know that because the movie October Sky is based on that, which is a great movie about the Rocket Boys, if you've never read that. That's a terrific analogy. I love that. Stu, we got to go. This was just terrific. I'm going to call you. I want to get more in touch with what you're doing over there and tell you more about what we're doing over here. And it might just be a nice thing to get together on that. Okay?
I'd love to. It's been too long. I look forward to it.
It has been. It has been.
Having me on.
Thank you for taking the time from a busy day to come on. We appreciate it. Everybody appreciate it. Thank you, Stuart Udell. You have a good day. Be safe.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it, bud. Bye-bye now.
Bye. No. Achieve3000.com. How's that? And also ace-ed.org. Ace-ed.org, that's us. That's where we're going to archive the show. Please join with us for Equity, okay, the American Consortium for Equity and Education. Okay, Stu's a great guy. It was a pleasure to have him back on. I'm so glad he got back in touch a few weeks ago. All right, so we're happy to do that. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Everybody be safe.